there's really only so much goodness you can take on the production as we move into the next wonderful superstar who's actually around and indeed has already been featured indirectly when we played the wonderful Apache Lux a couple of weeks ago with, of course, Kirsty Churchill. But now we can actually formally welcome from the superb, dynamic, sensational sound and band that is Apache Lux, the one and only Louisa Strachan. How are you, Louisa?
Yeah, good, thanks. How are you?
Excellent. Are you in Southend-on-Sea as we speak to you?
Yes, I am.
There we are. That's what we like to hear. Proper Southend. You know, Southend connects with Essex. Great. Connects with Lincoln. I feel strangely bondy. Not only because in fact, Tim Gillett, who's the editor of BBC Essex, news editor, who actually introduced me to this whole radio thing. So I feel strange though. Come full circle.
Anyway,
enough of that sort of setup, etc. Because Louisa probably was even born when we were talking about that. Emma, when I was describing the sound of Apache Lux, possibly the happiest and saddest song you've heard this year, it's entirely up to your good self. I think you were intrigued, were you not?
Yeah, that confused me, but it's very intriguing. Oh. I want to know why it is the happiest and saddest song.
Exactly. And Phil Collins with Motown Beats and Fleetwood Mac screaming to get in the room. This sounds wondrous. Louisa, what's it all about?
Well, I think the happy and sad is because the tone of the music of the song is quite upbeat, but actually the narrative is one that's not particularly cheery. So I think that's probably where that comes from.
That was something which, when Eva, we played this a couple of days ago, a couple of weeks ago actually, when it was first released, we kind of felt, well, it's a kind of happy number, but you know, maybe, you know, if you listen to those lyrics, it's heartbreaking.
It's like a hidden message, I guess.
From the sky in the centre.
Indeed. Bursting. Even the desk has fallen apart.
Oh, God.
I know, sometimes you just
technical
think,
issues.
It's just extraordinary. I put it down here. Honestly, sometimes you think it's a magic patch. Listen, enough of such stuff. I think we're actually ready to have another unveiling. Actually, it'll be another airing for Only When You're Lonely, which is the number from Apache Lux. By the way, are we getting the pronunciation right there, Louisa? Is it Apache Lux? Is it Apache Lux? Is it Apache Lux?
It's Apache Lux. You were right first time.
It is Apache Lux. That's what I said, because you know, I wasn't sure. Are we talking Native American here? Should we be into all sorts of other areas? Stay with us, Louisa. We're going to find out more about this happy, sad, sad, happy song in a few moments. Deserves a special midweek drive round of applause. Let's go for it. Yay! And there's also a Monster House remix as well from London's Boys K&K, which is already filling up dance floors with a very special spaced out remix from San Marcos based Lost in Spaced. Lost and Space.
Nice.
Well done, Louisa. As you said, you are responsible for increasing the size of the band Apache Lux by 100%. Presumably, those were your vocals that were being performed there in full force with Only When You're Lonely.
That's correct, yeah.
Thank God for that, because there is a moment, you know, it didn't play that, it's not us at all. You know, it's a completely different angle.
Definitely not Jay.
I tell you, there are certain moments on this show where we thought, yeah, it wouldn't have surprised me. We said, sorry, I never heard that one before, ever. Never mind. Emma, let's turn to your good self.
Yeah, I thought that was fantastic. Louisa, I want to know what sort of got you interested in the kind of dancey type music scene.
I've always been into dance music from when I was really young, really. There's been quite a vibrant clubbing scene in Essex, and so I always used to go out and listen to lots of different electronic music, and it's something that I've always been interested in, and obviously I've always sang as well, so it's always been a style that I've been drawn to make music.
Claire.
I've really, really enjoyed that, and I think that I love how you've mixed sort of very different sounds, and it works. There's kind of always a worry that when you're mixing so many different genres or whatever, that it might not work. But how long did it take you to kind of get the sound that you were wanting to get?
Jay and I aren't really fixed on a sound, funnily enough. One of the reasons I think our partnership works so well is actually we both like lots of different varied types of different music. That Jay's been very into the rock scene. He's been in a rock band previously as well, and I really like soul music and all that kind of thing. So we get in the studio and we make noise and then decide if it's something that we like to hear, and if it works, then we put it out. If it doesn't, then we sit on it for ages and ages and ages and then throw it away.
No, never throw it away. We've got the re-release and the classic albums to be developed on that basis. Big Bed Records would not like if you just throw it away, for goodness sakes. I'm still recovering from that.
I mean, in the virtual sense, you can't throw anything away anymore, can you?
Precisely. I mean, yeah, I'm still recovering from a statement that you made a few moments ago about Essex actually being a place we can go clubbing, really? The only way in Essex.
Well, maybe not anymore.
Surely not. You know, you've got all, I mean, every club you go into has got a sort of TV documentary crew actually sort of filling. Maybe that's
it was before that.
In the good old days.
Yeah, in the good old days.
Eva, your thoughts on Apache Lux?
Yeah, no, I liked it. It was really nice. I still can't get the thing between the sad and the happy.
No,
I would still say it's more happy.
It
than
is more.
Sad.
I would agree with you.
But I like it. It's a good sound.
More happy than sad from that point of view, and we even actually have liked your Facebook page as well. Yeah. So you know that's quite
lovely.
How
it's
so generous.
It's just richly deserved, every sense of the word. How can people get hold of the fabulous Only When You're Lonely? Is it available through most of the usual sources, Louisa?
Yeah, it's officially released on the 20th of November. So if you're a Spotify user, then if you give us a follow on Spotify, it'll notify you as soon as it's up there. We're also going to be on iTunes Music, and Amazon as well. So, yeah, all of the usual places.
And obviously part of Big Bed Records scenario, we spoke to Kirsty Churchill from Big Bed Records a few weeks ago. Do you ever get to meet Kirsty? Because Kirsty's from Surrey, just as Emma Tinson's from Surrey. Or do you case, no, we don't speak to people from Surrey, we're Essex.
Yeah, there's not a sort of east-west divide, but I've not met her, no.
Home counties war.
This is the classic thing. You can see the Big Bed Records studio thinking, we can't have the Essex people in at the same time as the Surrey people. It'll be a disaster. Or it could be genius, just waiting to happen. Emma, in terms of the actual sort of musical genre and so on, what sort of sprang to your mind when you actually heard Only
Yeah, you know what? I found it really interesting, and it isn't quite refreshing. You know, it's something that is a little bit of a mix of everything, really. And I wanted to know, was it something that you were thinking about a specific target audience for? Because it is quite different, really.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think... we don't really think about our target audience when we're making music. We just make the music we want to make, and if people like it, then that's brilliant. If they don't, then it doesn't really matter, to be perfectly honest. It's just something that brings us happiness, if you like. Sounds really cheesy, but
It's better than bringing you Simon Cowell, let's face it. You know, the show's not working and you don't want to go there, seriously, despite the fact, obviously, we were singing the praises of Mon Ami, who were the bands that were actually up and performing. Just let me know how Mon Ami are doing.
I don't think they got through. I mean, I'm not a huge follower of the X Factor, but I don't think they actually got past the round that we were talking to them about.
This was one of the sort of aspects, Louisa, that we were having a conversation with a couple who were very talented in their own way, which is actually they were too good.
Schools,
they were far too good to actually take part in the whole thing.
I'm sure they got some great exposure out of it, though.
Yeah, exactly.
It's worked out for a lot of people, isn't it?
Yeah. All publicity is good publicity.
Makes perfect sense.
Exactly.
So, musically speaking, would you like some Girls Aloud or some Roseanne Murphy?
Oh, Roseanne Murphy, definitely.
I thought so. I just had a sense that we weren't having a Nicola or indeed Cheryl or Sarah fan here. And as far as Kimberly was concerned,
love Girls Aloud, though. Don't knock it. They have some great songs.
Exactly. They've got dancing tunes.
Yeah. Exactly. And in terms of
the Underground was amazing.
Oh. Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Would you like Mama's Place or You Know Me Better or indeed Overpowered?
You Know Me Better.
You Know Me Better. Very good. Well, the two final questions for you, good self, whilst we get Roseanne Murphy into position to actually do her performance, is, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on this, your telephonic debut, Louisa Strachan?
Have I what? Sorry, I didn't
Has it been okay for you? Have you enjoyed the last few months?
Yeah, it's been great, thank you.
That's good.
I didn't understand it.
Well, the next critical question, are you related to Gordon Strachan, the former Scotland football manager, or indeed current Scotland football manager?
No, am I related to Michaela.
Just want to clarify
the funeral
that.
Director.
Both things, which if we didn't ask you. So can we look forward to inviting you back again in the near future and continuing to spread the word when it comes to Apache Lux? Will you return?
Absolutely.
Yay!
Okay, Roseanne Murphy, You Know Me Better. Great news, superlative news, because the power of the magical world of Manila PR and others have worked. And Stephen Dale Pettit is with us. Stephen, good evening. How are you, sir?
I'm really well. How are you doing, Alex?
Well, we're delighted to be... I mean, we already did a massive big up on the superlative Pettit track that we were hearing earlier. I'm Back, the World Tour. We didn't realise you started off as a busker, of course. That's extraordinary.
Well, I didn't start off that way, but it's a part of my story. I mean, the last phase certainly started off that way, yeah.
Well, I mean, already people are raving about the last thing. And quick introductions, we have Claire Margerison from Harrogate, of course, North Yorkshire. Eva MacDonald from Lincoln, England. And the wonderful Emma Tinson from Surrey. So you're kind of crossing all the demographic boundaries here, Stephen.
Covering all areas.
It's generally sort of people will talk. That's the important thing. See what we did
cool.
there? People talk.
Cool.
And yeah, don't worry. We'll play it again soon. In fact, we'll link up to Graham Harper in a few moments.
What song did you play?
That would be People Talk.
Cool.
Yeah, we thought it was.
It's a good end.
And in fact, yes, it deserves another airing, which it will get in a matter of 4 or 5 minutes or so from now. Claire, thoughts for Stephen Dale Pettit?
How did you get into the whole, from busking to getting your album out there? How did you go about that?
Well, as I kind of mentioned in passing, I mean, I've been a musician all my life, and I had just reached a place of... despair, really. I'd had a record deal and it all had gone a bit pear-shaped and had turned to chemical enhancements that began to take over my life. And I started to play in the underground as a way... I was also living in a flat that had such thin walls and ceilings that I couldn't play an unamplified electric guitar without the neighbours getting... really irate. So it solved a lot of things. I got to go play without being yelled at or you know, the foot on the ceiling stomping and I was able to reconnect with the reason that I wanted to play guitar in the first place, which was blues. And then once I did that, people stopped and asked me for examples of what they were hearing, so I had to record an album. And then the BBC got wind of it, and I was on Midweek, and they did some TV, and that's kind of how it all started.
Looking at the sort of biography, Stephen, I mean, it is a huge narrative in itself. American-born guitarist, singer-songwriter, and new blues musician. Pettit's blues guitar experience started at a young age in California, continued through drug addiction, alcoholism, homelessness, and subsequent recovery. You went from being a performer in the London Underground to giving masterclass university lectures on blues music whilst becoming a well-known stage act. That's quite a life That's narrative. Funny.
Yeah, it's a bit of an arc, I guess, yeah.
Well, exactly. I mean, that's a motion picture, Stephen, to be honest. It's sort of putting the links together. Emma?
Yeah, I'm really interested, Stephen, actually, because you've got quite a few different places that you're going to on your UK tour here. Do you find that the audiences vary? Do you have a favourite place that you love playing?
Well, at the risk of offending the other places I don't mention or draw contrasts with, But I do find up north that they're really enthusiastic.
Yeah.
I guess not everybody goes to some of the places that they should. So there's also a bit of extra gratitude. I mean, they're really appreciative, I think. And they're just that bit more committed, you know?
And let's give a shameless plug for your latest album, Cracking the Code. Cracking the Code, which is out there. Is there a particular code that you are cracking? I mean, is it like the DNA code? Is it the double helix code? Is it the genetic code? Or is it just cracking the code of life?
It was a title that kind of presented itself to me. And once I entertained it as a possible title, it began to have all sorts of meanings. Mm. It was really, in terms of being a white guy playing the blues, there was something of a balancing act for me in my generation, which is to say, the British blues boom had come and gone, and punk had happened, and metal had happened, and all that stuff had happened, and I was so out of step with my peer group, and I was well aware that I wasn't a black person in the Mississippi Delta trying to play this music, so there seemed to be some sort of puzzle to solve in order for me to be able to do what I wanted to do. So it on some level for me, it meant that the guy that I was recording that album with is Vance Powell, who's a sonic genius. He's done all the Jack White stuff for the last 8 years, and he's recorded all sorts of people from Willie Nelson to Buddy Guy and all points in between. He came over to we were doing a sort of a mid-production meeting to take stock of where we were, and he brought a book on Bletchley Park, and that cinched it for me. That sort of synchronicity is the sort of thing I pay attention to, So Bletchley Park, of course, everybody probably knows, but just to be clear,
without Bletchley Park, we wouldn't have won the war, Stephen.
Exactly. So that's the deal there.
We've just been stunned, I say that with a capital STUNNED, by the Stephen Dale Pettit website, which actually has an animated Stephen Dale Pettit actually wandering through things with a kind of wonderful sort of set. I just thought, oh, that's fairly dull. That's just a guitar with cracking the code on it. I clicked on the guitar. Look what magic emerged.
flashy guitar tabs.
You got your press. You got your news. You got your gallery scenarios. There. You got images of Stephen.
Oh,
in
whoa. Whoa. There's stuff flying out the screen.
It's almost as though it's too rich for radio. But all we will say is, if it's safe and legal to do so, then do check out StephenDalePettit.com.
Yeah, there's nothing on there that's not fit for work. maybe I should say that there's loads of stuff that's not fit for work, and that means there's greater traffic. I don't know.
it's all great stuff, including, as I say, a range of videos as well from that point of view. Roxy's Nitty Gritty. Roxy the dog hosts a look into the making of 7% at Cotton. I'm very confused now.
I don't know
what we're getting from. It's a whole new world.
I have to actually say that particular clip does have, I think, a few swear words in it. So there you go.
I'd best not play that then. And the great news is, look at how all those gigs that are sold out. Look at them. You know, just literally falling one upon the other in terms of Stephen Dale Pettit scenario. Just great stuff. Stephen, you are on tour. We've got the details in front of us now, of course, because the folk in Stockton, on Tees, in the north, can actually enjoy you at the Ark in Stockton on the 17th of November. Then the day after, it's up to Glasgow.
Lots
of Scottish people up there, Stephen. Are you aware of that? That's
I'm hoping so.
Yeah, exactly. That's the 18th. Then the Home Firth, Picture Dome. You're down in London for the 21st of November, and then in Leamington at the Assembly on the 24th of November. And on the 25th of November, the Frome Cheese and Grain.
Mm.
You don't have to bring your own cheese, presumably.
Fine establishments and venues, all of them.
As Classic Rock magazine says, Pettit occupies a stunning middle ground between the fire of Freddie King, the instinct of Jimmy Page, and the soul of Eric Clapton. Actually, I'm just confirming, it is Stephen Dale Pettit and not Petit, because it's crucial, you know?
You got it right from the off. I mean, that's the way it's pronounced in America. People instinctively kind of probably want to pronounce it like the footballer or, you know, the guy...
Emmanuel Petit, exactly.
Or the type, the wire-walking Philippe Petit as well. But it's Pettit, where I was born and raised, that's what they said, and that's the way I stick to it.
And whereabouts in America, pray tell, Stephen, did you emerge on the planet?
Basically, a stone's throw from Joshua Tree in the middle of the California desert.
Well, now that is what you call a... I mean, Ilana Rain, of course, has been to that particular part, and I found it spiritually uplifting, and she's a director, so just by... In fact, it's probably the birth of Stephen Dale Pettit that actually led Bono and U2 to effectively sort of be inspired to be there. I think you should have a word with The Edge. I think probably, Adam Clayton, Larry Mullen Jr., they said, yeah, that's what we wanted. We wanted to channel the spirit of Stephen Dale Pettit. Stephen, I'm so pleased we got through to you. It just shows the importance of contacting the agent.
Try and try again.
Get the right number. But we were bemused because the number we were dialing was constantly being answered.
Yeah, we want to know who this random person
who was constantly
answering the phone
being answered,
breathing at us.
And somebody was just breathing. And we thought, we can't have much entertainment in radio by just having to go... On the other hand.
And there you were thinking I was far odder than you had ever imagined.
Well, yes, exactly.
It did cross our mind, it has to be said. But thankfully, it's been sensational. And a round of applause for Stephen J. Dale Pettit. Yay! So, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us? Now we finally managed to get through to you.
No, this has been fantastic. This is fantastic stuff. It's great.
So the next critical question is, will you return and keep us appraised of what is happening in the Pettit life?
Oh, I'd love to.
Excellent.
In a heartbeat. Love to.
Well, I think it's only right that for one of those rare occasions we play a tune not once but twice in the two-hour production. You know, first was about an hour ago. People might have been doing something. I thought, fantastic tune that was. They might have thought, it's already... Stephen, would you like to introduce the classic People Talk? Over to you, Stephen.
Ladies and gentlemen... We all live in places surrounded by other people, and the sort of habitual behavior human beings is, they kind of talk. So this is it, People Talk.
back in 1986, where Graham Harper was privy to the first broadcast-a-thon that we actually did, down in Dulwich, and I seem to recall, Graham, that was when you got your mouth organ out, or harmonica, and gave it some welly, so to speak,
with Michael Bottom. I had a go.
Magical. And of course, the great thing about that was it was before any of our co-presenters this evening were even born. It just goes to show. Never mind.
Oh, thank you very much.
Somehow I feel like Peter Ustinov in Logan's Run. Oh, what's going on there? But I don't have the cats. Anyway, in the studio we have, from the delightful world of Harrogate, Claire Margerison.
Hello.
Hello, Claire.
Finally, your English student and key science fiction aficionado who's desperately keen to find out what you make of Dark Star. And we also have the wonderful Eva MacDonald, fresh from Blackpool, where she was representing Lincoln as Miss Teen Lincoln at the Miss Teen UK event.
Hello.
Hello. Hello, Eva.
May recall, Graham, of course, was one of the judges for Miss Great Britain a wee while back. We got Graham to judge and a Dalek. That's the kind of eccentricities that exactly sort of work through. As you said, Graham,
you can't guess who won.
It was a tough call. And the lovely Emma Tinson from Surrey, and also keen aficionado, who was there this afternoon for the official launch of the Culture Shapers, Culture Makers, and I think it went quite well, really.
Indeed, I thought it went well. Loved it.
Exactly. But we are surprised, Graham, before we go into your views on Netflix, which of course was the prep we set for this whole thing, surprised because when we typed in Graham Harper, the usual GraameHarper, to the system, we get some images of Graham Harper, which are clearly you. We identify that. We say, yeah, that's Graham, that's Graham. But somebody who's actually... It's not you at all.
Can I just say as well, this other Graham Harper who has popped up.
Graham Harper.
The photo is of a younger person.
Yeah.
But it says he's 70.
Yeah.
He definitely isn't in that photo.
Well, that's not my fault. I didn't put it there.
It's extraordinary because Graham Harper is a British television director. Yes, he's best known for his work with the science fiction series Doctor Who. Yes, for which he is the only person to have directed episodes of both the original run and revived run of the programme. Yes, that's all correct from that point of view. A Doctor Who magazine described him as the longest serving crew member on Doctor Who. Yes, that's true. But then, of course, we get films... Nobody in Toyland, High Hopes, Saving Private Ryan, and The Face at the Window. Now, what's going on there?
There is some crazy crossover
going on. There's some strange manifestation happening when it comes to the web, Graham. That's all I can say.
In earlier life.
I blame Walt Disney. I'll say that again. I blame Walt Disney. I know we can't talk about the latest fantasy series, but it will be marvellous. Can we give the name once again, Graham? It is?
Evermore.
Evermore. Exactly.
In fact, I think it's called Evermore Chronicles. I don't even know I'm supposed to tell you that, but I have. No, I'm sworn. I've signed a document that is legal that if I say anything about it, discuss it at all, I can be sued. So I don't want to do that.
Exactly.
We will move on.
Thank you very much.
The last thing you want is the Mouse House invading Acton. You know, it's a different line entirely. We say some of the lines about Netflix. So Richard Fitzwilliams, as indeed Claire will attest to, was very concerned about Netflix. In fact, it was really key. I mean, this is something which he originally wrote about back in September. He says Netflix could ruin the cinema.
Yeah, he was saying basically that you have Netflix, and if we start streaming films on Netflix, then people will stop going to the cinema. And we were kind of saying, well, if you watch something on Netflix and you like it enough, then you will go to the cinema, and hey, it's better than watching illegally. Do you have any thoughts on this?
I was going to say, to end up eventually, but so I'm hoping we'll have a few minutes more. To be honest,
well, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic chat, Graham?
It's just that's kind of the end. The end for me is, look, they're here to stay. This is a huge organisation with millions and millions of subscribers all over the world. They ain't going to go away. They've developed big developments with the likes of Harvey Weinstein Company or whatever. So they're enormous. It ain't going to stop, and all those people are still going to see these films. But I agree with you. I think eventually cinemas may take a dip. Maybe they've got to change, become cafe cinemas or whatever, or something else, something more interesting. But eventually I think people will go back in their droves because they want the cinema experience, which is fantastic and fabulous. That's why we all love film.
Yeah, definitely. I think that Netflix has been quite good, you know, on a positive note, that it's been good for
you know, independent and more unique films and TV shows. There's been a lot of original Netflix series that have come out and have been really popular that might not have got funding from other companies. So I think it's quite good.
House of Cards, Daredevil. Yeah.
Well, I think because they don't have to rely on advertising, they've got massive subscriptions from all over the world. They can afford, I think, to make more programmes and production. I talk television, but film productions and and can afford, I think, I hope they do, to encourage independent, small independent companies to give them a chance that they can show their stuff theatrically, but it will get a massive audience and hopefully some real good funding by being shown by streaming on the internet or whatever. So I think there's a huge positiveness there.
So I think we agreed in saying, Richard, you got it wrong on this occasion.
Richard, he's going to be so angry tomorrow morning.
we'll be finding out from Phil Dennis when he gets well what he thinks about the whole thing. And he just said he got up this morning sick as he was surprised to find that the brand new episode of his free weekly podcast, Chill Pack. He does sound very rough on the latest podcast. He said the same about me last week, but I kept the show going, you know, so it's perfectly okay. You know, that's the way things sort of manifest in the whole routine. Emma, any thoughts that you'd like to share with Graham about Life, the Universe, or indeed Dark Star, which of course is the movie that he will be commenting on, and we'll be screening Dark Star in this university at the wonderful MTech scenario on Wednesday the 25th of November. So between now and then, Graham and I will be getting together to record his particular podcast of The Culture Shapers.
Indeed. Can I say something about that, Alexis?
Of course.
They made a director's cut, a kind of lengthened version, yes, where they improved, I believe, all the what's names. But I am not talking about that one. I'm talking about the original.
Fair enough. Okay.
Because I think it's interesting that the mats, for example, have been improved. But I like to talk about the mats as they are, if you know what I mean. The mat meaning
the things that effectively go in the background, like, for instance, no spoilers, but the giant inflatable beach ball alien,
for example. Yeah,
I'm really scared to watch this now. No, I think that's the same with, you know, the Star Wars films. You know, the original trilogy have been updated somewhat and had even new characters CGI'd into the backgrounds stuff, which seems really, really odd. And a lot of fans, I think, were quite annoyed at that when they did that.
As annoyed as when Jar Jar Binks was introduced into the airframe. And of course, the other thing is, you can ask Graham what he sort of thought of 2001: A Space Odyssey. In fact, Clay, you might want to do this, because it would have been Graham commenting on 2001: A Space Odyssey had Phil Linus not nabbed it and said, I want to do that.
Well, yeah, no, I really love 2001. I'm actually going to be talking about it in one of my essays as well. So, yeah, no, 2001's great. What are your thoughts on it? Have a moment to talk about 2001.
I'll tell you what, but I'll also correct something that Alexis said at one time in the podcast about mentioning me having some connection with them. The studios when they were making that by being a taxi driver. I've never been a taxi driver, but what I did...
You're a driving instructor.
Yeah, I was a driving instructor.
Easy,
and
easy confusion.
To drive Stanley Kubrick's...
Less of a confusion than your current entry on the web.
Yeah.
Sorry?
No, he's never a passenger, he's a driver. Sorry, Graham.
But I was teaching someone, the Stanley Kubrick... I didn't know Stanley. I mean, I knew who he was, but I didn't know it was Stanley Kubrick's PA, but I was teaching her to drive, and she passed. And guess what? She invited me into the studio that day to come and have a look at what they were making. Nobody knew anything about 2001 being made, and Stanley Kubrick was an icon to me up in the gods. I mean, and I got to meet him for 5 minutes that night and say hello and blah, blah, blah. And I got to look at some of the space modules and the pods and et cetera. So I had a fantastic intro to something I didn't know what it was until it came out, I think, 3 years later, because this was in 65. So I got to go and see it. I won't tell you, waffle on and more about it anymore, but at the time, it was considered one of the most boring films it's ever been, because it's so quiet and still, apart from the orchestral stuff, and that was the whole point. The whole point is space is still and quiet and silent, and life somehow goes on in this story, and it's absolutely, it's incredible.
It really is.
What Kubrick discovered and how he told that story.
There you have it. And you can see it at the MTEC on the 18th of November if you're in the Lincoln area in full glorious, well, colour and sound and various other things. It's all good stuff.
It's a great movie. You can watch it many, many times and get something new.
Yes, definitely.
And the week after, Dark Star. As if sometimes we're just too good. Free as well. Completely free. It's great stuff. Graham, I'm going to ask Eva to put those last two questions to you. Go, Eva.
Of course. Have you had an interesting telephonic link with us today?
I have. It's a pity I didn't get to talk to all of you about different things. That would have been really interesting too.
We can do that another time. And will we be hearing again from you soon?
Yes, and be there.
We will be. Yes.
All of you.
That's an important thing, exactly. As the Hoosiers would say, goodbye, Mr. A.
Bye-bye.
Well, have been momentarily goodbye, Mr. Harper. Goodbye, Mr. A, after a fashion. But it's hello to Mr. E. He's always sorted for E's and whiz because he's the editor of the premier magazine when it comes to science fiction, raving about the delights of Christopher Nolan remaking Akira and ranting about remote control AT-ATs, Millennium Falcon drones, talking Chewbacca masks. If Star Wars toys like those had been available when Richard Edwards was a kid, his head would have exploded. No, Richard, no!
In a good way.
A good head explosion.
Yeah, I mean, it would have been an explosion of joy. I just wouldn't have been able to handle all that cool stuff.
Well, never mind. So, as ever, you're not doing an impersonation of Braveheart in the current edition, because I thought for a moment he's got the Braveheart mask on, except it's not in blue, it's in sort of red and white.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He's obviously sort of echoing.
Well, that wouldn't have ended well for me if it was Braveheart, so...
No, exactly. And you'll be pleased to know that one of our team has not only seen Spectre, but she's seen it in IMAX.
In IMAX, but not IMAX 3D, which I was kind of sad about.
I wasn't aware that Spectre had been released in IMAX 3D.
I don't think it did. I think I was just imagining that.
Yeah.
I just had in my mind, I'll see it in IMAX 3D, and then I got there and it wasn't 3D, and I was like, oh...
Yeah.
I think I just got too excited.
Yeah, I don't think, you know, Bond believes in 3D. It's not the sort of British way, I suppose.
Yeah. But you know what? It didn't need it. That the opening scene was so fantastic.
I went to see it, and of course, was it wonderful? It actually sort of coincided with the actual Day of the Dead, you know, in Mexico,
oh, really?
Which they've been celebrating in the last few days. So it could have been happening live as we speak. Overall, I give it an 8 out of 10. There we are. Said it now.
Yeah.
Sorted the way of thinking through. Even though I was sitting next to somebody who had major flatulence issues.
Oh, not, no.
It's not, you know, I mean, I sort of went there, but it was a fairly packed cinema, even though the time I thought, oh, no, please do not sit. And he did. And, oh, God.
Don't get that with Netflix.
Exactly, Claire.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? Key sort of point.
No popcorn rustling, no nothing.
You know, for my, I just want, I mean, I even, Richard, went to the stage of going, I actually tuttered at one stage. You know, it's just,
But sort of the passive aggression comes out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly so. That was the key thing. Have you seen it yourself as yet?
I haven't. I'm going next week with my wife when we actually have a shared day off.
Lovely.
Oh, very good. Well, it's all great. And all I will say is there is a white pussycat. Yeah. Mm. There is a white pussycat. Mm. Isn't there, Emma?
Yes.
Yeah. Enough of such excitements. Let's move on to the current edition of SFX issue 267. It's gone all Hunger Games crazy because Mockingjay Part 2 is out. Are you looking forward to this, Claire Margerrison?
So much. We were all looking at when we could go to the midnight, whether we could go to the midnight showing or not, or whether we could make it like all that time. No, I am really, really excited for it. The series has been a big part of my life. Like, I read the first one back in 2009, I believe, as part of a review thing, and then it's just always sort of been there. I was the first in the shop to buy the third book, as it always is with me, with books. But no, I'm very, very much excited to see the film.
Yeah, sure. And Eva McDonald, are you looking forward to The Hunger Games? Closure?
Well, I've never really... I've seen The Hunger Games a bit.
A bit.
Just a bit. Not like sat down and watched
just
one.
Just seen
film.
The trailer.
Yeah, I mean, returning briefly to Star Wars, whilst we're focusing on a movie scenario here, Emma, you did say that the thing about Star Wars that you're most looking forward to is you are of an age where this is the first Star Wars you will genuinely see in the cinema.
Do you know what? I have a bit of a confession, actually. Mm. When I went to see Spectre in the cinema the other day, they played the Batman and Superman trailer, which was quite amazing to see in IMAX. And then they played the Star Wars trailer in IMAX, and I sort of welled up a little bit. Oh. And the music came out. And I was sat there and I was like, what is happening to me? But I genuinely did like well up and get a bit emotional. I'm so excited about it. So I really hope it is good.
I think there was an entire planet of people when the whole Chewie, we're home, Han Solo line.
That was the exact line that got me.
Yeah, I had a little bit in my eye, didn't you?
Yeah, and then the Millennium Falcon came out and the music was blasting.
The music's incredible.
And I was just like, oh. But, I'm really looking forward to it.
And that, Richard, is why Emma Tenston is such a wonderful ambassador for Telefancy and Society and Symposium events. You see, it's classic line for
just
that
get so emotional.
But we'd be most remiss if we didn't actually draw to the listeners' attention your own personal recollections in the latest edition of SFX magazine of that thing that even McDonald came to the studio a couple of weeks ago and said, Happy Back to the Future Day.
It did, yes.
Yeah, exactly. This is the line that was actually there, and there writ large were your own recollections of the back to Claire. Any thoughts you'd like to share with us about the Marty McFly thing? Do you feel as though, you know, Richard's views and sort of words that were crafted, you know, honed and skilled and as you'd expect from the editor of SFX, you know, thoughts on the sort of message that's coming out there?
I think that it was the whole, I like the ideas about the fact that you're talking, when you look 50 years into the future of how a film has made such an impression on society, and people still were watching it, and there was various marathons.
30 years, exactly.
Yeah, all of the marathons and stuff. I just think that it is really impressive. I think that a lot of people saw this film, and to be able to reconnect with it and rewatch it, I think it is such a good thing.
I think it's a film as well that everyone loves. It's you know, it's got comical moments, it's got sci-fi moments, and, you know, great characters. So I think it is. I've never met someone who said that they didn't like Back to the Future. Mm.
Mm. And if they didn't, if they said that, they wouldn't be your friend anymore.
obviously.
That's the way I look at it. Yeah.
Curious, on the SignFM website, we actually have Spoiler Podcast Episode 3, Back to the Future Trilogy. I think we know what happens there. It's all right. Richard, we've just launched today The Culture Shapers, a series of classic free screenings of science fiction movies, which are associated podcasts. Hopefully you'll join us for one of your movies. But the ones that we're featuring in this six episodes sort of thing prior to the Christmas break are as follows. We launched today, of course, with what, Claire?
Logan's Run.
Okay.
Nearly forgot that. It's today already. It's a long day.
Logan's Run sort of kicked us off from that point of view. Next week we'll be featuring Metropolis. Then we go on to 2001: A Space Odyssey. Dark Star follows on the 25th of November with Forbidden Planet, or rather Things to Come, H.G. Wells' Things to Come, coming in on the 2nd of December, and Forbidden Planet wrapping the sequence up on the 9th of December. Tough call, Richard, but how does that collection of six movies sit with your good self if you're looking at a thing called The Culture Shapers?
Oh, well, there's some really important ones there. I mean, I think Forbidden Planet is probably the one that stands out as the really important one. I mean, that was kind of a really important space sci-fi thing. I mean, it's a great film anyway, but also very influential, and you've got an amazing robot who kind of so it was one of the most influential robots, I guess, until C-3PO and RTD2 came along. Then, Logan's Run, you know, great sort of example of 70s sci-fi. Hasn't dated particularly well, but that's because of the clothes as much as anything.
Jenny Agutter likes to get her clothes off as soon as possible. So, strange enough, she doesn't really do that in the sort of S.H.I.E.L.D. movies that she does, but there we are.
No, I mean, maybe that's the next one, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. 2001, of course, we were just talking to Graham Harper, and he was saying that, you know, it can be seen as very dull, very boring, on the other hand, it can be seen as amazing.
Well, I mean, 2001, the visuals are incredible. I mean, it's not a film I would choose to watch again and again. You know, I find it quite dry. Mm-hmm. But there is, you know, it's, again, so influential. And, you know, the effects, considering this was made in 1968, the effects are incredible. Again, it's a very different kind of film to Star Wars, but it kind of was groundbreaking, with, I guess, without being sort of that scale of hit.
Makes perfect sense. Last week, of course, was it last week we featured Tara Banish, or was it the week before?
It was the week before,
because Claire actually hadn't had a chance to speak to it, but we were very excited to actually sort of say that Tara finally got two of her stories on the front cover of the non-subscriber SFX magazine.
Claim to fame.
She was excited as well. I thought she was almost going to swim once again with those otters, or indeed, you know, other meerkat forms. I think I prefer meerkats, but I think she likes the otters. But yes, so not only did we actually have our own Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but also Gotham. From your own point, if we were to push you, Richard, which one would you go for, or would you say neither?
I don't think either have massively grabbed me, and I haven't caught up on season two yet, and I gather that season two of Gotham is a big improvement on season one. I think Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was nowhere near as good as Agent Carter. I think Agent Carter is absolutely brilliant. And I think Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.'s kind of got a bit of catching up to do to get that good, but Agent Carter's got the advantage that it doesn't have to fit sort of in between all the sort of Marvel movies. So, neither of them would be my sort of top picks.
And that's what we like about Richard, because he's honest. You know, there are other science fiction magazines who just lie through their teeth and say, it's perfect, it's wonderful.
Honesty is the best policy.
So always good from that point of view. Eva, any questions you want to put to Richard about life, the universe, or current up wonderful things about Future's SFX magazine, the wonderful fact that Comics Review is back with us, and anything else, really?
I'd just ask about the SFX magazine and...
What? Yes, let's ask about the latest SFX magazine.
How's it going?
Exactly. You know, that sort of bastion of Bath, which
How's
covers all sorts of things, where we have the latest news, Philip Pullman's His Dark Materials gets a TV show, female-fronted Van Helsing TV show headed to sci-fi, The Walking Dead
Vanessa
season...
Helsing. Yep,
yep, yep. The Vanessa Helsing. See what they did there? It's not Vanessa
Helsing. It's one of those where you wonder if the name came first. I don't know.
The 30 Greatest Terminator Moments, and of course Doctor Who Season 9 Episode 7 The Zygon Invasion Review. It does seem to have split people, the current series of Doctor Who, certainly right
split
down the line.
Yeah.
Well, I did the last one. I think the whole era has very much done that. And it's weird, you know, even in the office we'll talk and one person will say, it's the best episode of the series, and someone else will say, I thought it was terrible.
I think he's come into his own more, Capaldi, in this season than the last one. I think that he's found his Doctor a bit more, which is what, yeah.
I find it quite interesting. I mean, I am behind a few episodes, I have to say, but that they've pretty much all been two-parter episodes this season. Mm. So I'm not sure. I mean, when Russell T. Davis was in charge, a lot of the episodes that Moffat wrote were two-parters. Mm. So that's clearly what he does well.
With the exception of Blink, of course, and The Girl in the Fireplace.
Yes. But, yes, it's interesting.
They said going into this series that they wanted to sort of throw it up a little bit, because last year, except for the finale, was all one-parters, and this time they're kind of two-parters, but like the previous one with Maisie Williams, that was kind of a vaguely linked two-parter, and they said they wanted to make it so you weren't sure if it was a direct continuation of the story or they were sort of linked more loosely. Mm. So I think they're just playing around with the format a little bit, because Doctor Who, you know, everyone's so used to the 45-minute form, and they know where all the big key beats are coming. It's kind of like just to throw people a little bit, I guess.
It just shows the magic. It's a bit like when James Bond goes head-to-head with Drax the Destroyer. Oh, no, it's Dave Bautista. It's Drax the Destroyer. No, it's Dave Bautista. Anyway.
Well, the thing is, Drax already exists in James Bond continuity, so...
Yeah, exactly. As in Hugo Drax from, of course, the movie Moonraker.
Yeah.
You appear with the tiresome tediousness of an unloved season, Mr. Bond. was a classic in its own way. He was only trying to repopulate the planet after he'd kind of made everybody extinct.
You can't really sort of claim he's being altruistic, though, can he? He destroyed everybody first.
But wasn't Holly Goodhead good, as portrayed by Lois Childs? Anyway, that's by the by. Again, before all the three co-presenters were actually born. Never mind. It was the 70s. Different line entirely. And Richard Fitzwilliams would be nauseous at the very fact of even mentioning a Roger Moore James Bond. It's okay. It's a different area. Would you like to select a number, Richard, between 2 and 26? Something that normally we hand over to our other folk. This is the first time for a long while you've actually been able to close the show here. So which number would you like? Yes, to actually find out what message. It's like a Chinese fortune cookie, this piece, Richard. So it could actually be very significant in terms of where it sends you off in your own career pathway and more. So no pressure, but which number between 2 and 26?
17.
Very bold there. There's no messing about. Straight in with number 17. Let's see what the universe has to say then.
Once you make up your mind and start something, commit to it, say yes, and never look back, do you have any doubt, any whatsoever, that I will not rush to your side, that legions won't be summoned, that players won't be drawn to your corner, connections made, circumstances crafted, dots connected, that the course of history won't be irrevocably changed? Good. I didn't think so. I'd say you're ready. The universe.
Hopefully that's helped the spiritual journey of Richard Edwards just a teeny bit more in terms of the whole thing. You may say, I live in Bath. I don't need help with my spiritual journey, thank you very much. But yeah, we just thought we'd put it there. You still there, Richard?
Oh, I feel much better. Yeah, I was trying to contemplate the meaning of everything I just heard. It's quite heavy, man.
That's why there's a podcast. You can play it back later. You see, there's always a message there. Final news, actually, I have subscribed not to one, but another two specials. I've been just crazy, Alaska. I've subscribed to Crime Scene and also the comic book scene that you actually emerged from. So,
Comic Heroes and Crime Scene.
Comic Heroes and Crime Scene. It's on sale
now, yeah.
This is amazing. But let's talk about Mark Ruffalo confirming that the Hulk will be around in Thor 3 as a buddy picture.
Oh, wow. I think it sounds really cool. Yeah. Really good fun. Thor and Hulk together seems like a good match. And they've never really made a Hulk movie work by himself, so this seems a good way of getting more Hulk action, I think.
Emma's still recovering from the... in fact, Emma and Eva, when we actually showed the latest casting for Spider-Man, a child, I think, was how you referred to the person.
Yes.
We best not go there at this particular time. And nevertheless, and indeed, Captain America Civil War will link to Thor Ragnarok, according to Jamie, of course. Jamie Hiddleston, we'll find it, go to gamesradar.com/SFX and you'll find it's Jamie Alexander, quite clearly. Last two questions for Richard Edwards, please. Emma.
That was a hard choice then.
I know, but Claire's going to be warming up for tomorrow morning, you see, so she'll be psyched up for that. Go.
Okay, Richard, have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us this evening?
I have, thank you.
Brilliant.
That's nice. Goodbye. Yeah, exactly.
Good. And will you be joining us again on the show anytime soon?
I hope so.
Exactly. Yay. A round of applause for Richard Edwards, who tonight was taking on the role of Phil Linus. Difficult
and
that is
a good
to
job
be.
He did, didn't he?
Very impressed with that. You know, just to go into that sort of casting thing at this particular stage, quite phenomenal. You haven't quite finished yet, Richard, because you need to join us in a farewell to the listener in a few seconds. So don't just sort of say goodbye as I sort of wrap up by saying thanks to Cameron Tilbury from Nashville, Stephen Dale Pettit, finally, our ace blues musician and so on, Louisa Strachan, of course, from Apachelux, and Graham Harper, our East BAFTA award-winning director, and of course your good self, Richard Edwards. And in the studio, thanks to Eva MacDonald. Have you enjoyed the show, Eva?
I have, yes.
Back tomorrow morning?
Yes, indeed.
Yay, see, I knew she wasn't, even though she was in Blackpool, she hasn't come too glamorous with all this.
Very
good. And Claire, okay for your good self?
Yeah, it's been good fun, thank you.
Back tomorrow?
Of course.
And Emma?
Indeed, I'll be back bright
there
and early.
You are. It's all sorted to do. Right, that's it. 1, 2, 3, we're out of here. Siren FM continues with all sorts of great stuff, etc. Wrapping up with the Beatles. Can we all say bye-bye? 1, 2, 3.
Bye.
Richard, we didn't quite catch you there. Would you just say goodbye?
Bye.
Yay!
Yeah.